Well, we promised you a deep conversation about surviving cancer. And our two guests to help us do that today, Dr. Florence Dede, who is a consultant general surgeon at Kolebu. She's here with us right now. Very nice to meet you, Dr. Dede.
Thank you.
We'll be joined in a little bit by Dr. Abna Sapong, and she's the head of the palliative care unit at the Department of Family Medicine, also at Kolebu. But Dr. Dede, I've been looking forward to meeting you in particular because you have a unique situation. In addition to being a medical professional, a surgeon, you have survived cancer. You've been through it. And I can well imagine that your perspectives on it are unique because of your training, but also because this is something that you've personally gone through. Let me ask you this. How long ago was it?
All right. So I had a diagnosis of breast cancer in 2016. So that's 9 years. 16.
16.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. Mm. And I mean, it's not the kind of thing you imagine for yourself. And when it's happening, were you suspicious before you were there?
No. So actually, I found a lump in my breast. So right. I had it examined. I did the x-rays, a mammogram, and it didn't look like anything to worry about. So I decided I'd keep an eye on it for a while because I'd actually had a lump taken out before.
Right.
But after a while, I noticed it had become a little bigger. So then I decided, let me just take it out because I didn't like the fact that it had become bigger. Mm. But honestly, cancer didn't cross my mind. And by then I was working as a surgeon in the Department of Surgery, taking care of cancer patients. So when I say cancer didn't cross my mind, I know what cancer looks like. Yeah. And it didn't look like it was that. Mm. But then we took it out. The diagnosis of cancer can only be definitively made when a pathologist looks at the lump. So we took it out, the pathologist looked at it and got back and said it's a cancer. Mm. So honestly, it came as a surprise. Mm. But I guess I took it in good faith. One good thing was it was early. So that encouraged me a lot because I know that when you pick it early and you treat it, the outcomes are good. So that was something that really kept me going. So from then, there were other things that had to be done. I needed to have further surgery, needed to have some radiotherapy, hormonal therapy. I didn't need chemotherapy because of the type of cancer I had.
Right.
So I went through all the other things and I'm currently still taking my hormonal medications. Mm. So definitely not an easy journey, but it's possible to go through.
Yeah, thank goodness. Now, I was asking you this before we came on air. I was saying that because of your training, it must be a blessing and a curse, right? Because once you hear that cancer diagnosis, there are things you know that the average person doesn't know about cancer. But that's not necessarily a good thing, is it?
Well, so that can make you very frightened. Mm. Just like people go and read all sorts of things when they have a diagnosis and then they get very scared. So knowing when you have a lot of information, it can scare you to some extent. But also having the information also, like I said, I knew it was early. So that was an encouragement because I know that once you pick it early and you treat it, the outcomes, the evidence is that the outcomes are good. So as much as it was a bit scary, I'll go to the ward, I'll see patients with my same type of cancer who've come in with very advanced stages, not doing so well, you do some of them. So obviously, naturally, you would think, is this going to happen to me? So that was a bit scary, especially when I went back to work after treatment. But one day at a time, it gets better.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about your state of mind while you were working through this, right? As in working at Kolebu, treating other people with cancer. Yeah. I mean, there's a Nigerian expression about standing in your own wahala to solve somebody's wahala.
Yeah. How I mean, I think the good thing is it makes me appreciate what the patients go through better. And there are times when I don't always talk about it. I mean, I don't tell every patient I see that I've been through this. Mm-hmm. But when I notice the patient is struggling, I usually would say it. Mm-hmm. And it always makes such a big difference because patients usually would look at you as you're a doctor, you're talking about something you do not understand. But when I say that I have been through it, I've had the treatment, I'm still going strong, it always makes a difference. It always softens them a bit. It makes them, I guess, realize that there's hope. This is not the end of it. So from that angle, I think it can make my work a little easier. But from the other angle, initially, like I said, it was difficult. I mean, every day you'd think about it. You see patients, you are reminded, you wonder what the outcomes are going to be. So in that, along those lines, it was a bit difficult to start with. But with time, as the years go by and you realize you are doing well, you begin to forget.
So you had hormonal treatment, you had radiotherapy.
And I had surgery.
And you had surgery, of course. Over what period of
time? All right. So for me, I started with surgery. There are different approaches. So some people will start with chemo, some people will start with surgery. So I started with surgery. And then about a month after surgery, I had radiotherapy. So that was for 18 days. A little over 3 weeks, because weekends are not part of it. And then after that, I started. The hormonal treatment is just a tablet every day. So that I've been taking for the past 9 years. Okay. It's recommended that we take for about 10 years.
How did your family take it?
My family was very supportive. I'm somebody who, I like to share what is going on with me. So, I mean, the very day I got the diagnosis, I was with a colleague. I mentioned it to her. I mentioned it to another colleague. I told my sisters. I have three sisters. I told them that very day. My husband, of course, I told him. So I'm not somebody, and the people who work with me all know, it's not something I hide. I'm happy to talk about it. And I think that's a good thing because you get a lot of support. Going through cancer treatment is not easy. Apart from the physical things at times, depending on what stage it is, some people may even have pain and all that. At times there are side effects of treatment. And if you keep it to yourself, I think it's more difficult to cope if you keep it to yourself. The thing is to share it with people who will be supportive of you. So not to share it with somebody who is going to tell you that don't go to hospital, don't have surgery, those ones will not help. So choose the people that you know will be supportive. And for me, my family was very, very supportive. My husband, very supportive.
Yeah. They didn't know what you know. They are not all doctors, are they?
No.
So they didn't have the same information you did. They must have been a little bit more panicky than you.
Well, I wouldn't say so. I think the way you also present it to them helps them to know whether they should. So if I was panicking, then naturally they would panic. Mm-hmm. But if this is somebody who, this is what she does, she treats breast cancer and she has it and she's telling you that I'm going to be okay, then you should believe that she's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And really, it's, again, when you pick it early, the treatment is not so cumbersome. So like I said, I didn't even need chemotherapy. Mm-hmm. If it had been picked up much later, even for the type I had, I would still have needed chemotherapy. Some types, no matter how early you pick it, you will need chemotherapy. So generally, when it's early, it's less cumbersome, less side effects, less treatment, and treatment is less extensive and all that. So I think because it was early, that was very useful. I wasn't sick. Radiotherapy doesn't make you sick. Surgery doesn't make you sick. So I went through everything. I told my children as well. My children were quite young then, but I did tell them that I'm going into hospital. I have breast cancer. I'm going to treat. I'm not sure they really understood it very well because they were young, but at least they knew what was going on.
Now, when you talk to patients, because you do help cancer patients too, when you talk to them, what seems to be their biggest fear?
Well, I think the fears are a lot, but cancer, it's most people associate cancer with death because you hear of people who've had cancer and they've died. So the first thing is, am I going to survive this disease? I think that's one of the biggest fears. And we do know that cancer can be tricky. So at times you actually do everything you should, you treat it and all that, but the outcomes are not always as good as we want it to be. So that is a real fear. People wonder whether they are going to survive it. For breast cancer, it's also the fear of its effect on your body. So some people may have to have their breast taken off. And as women, I'm sure most women cherish their breasts the way they look.
And so, were you worried about that?
I actually wanted to do that, but I didn't need to do that. So I ended up just having the lump taken out. But right. Initially, because it's cancer, so I was like, just take the whole breast off and let me be free. But then in talking with my colleagues, it was like, it's so small, you don't need to do that. So gradually I decided, okay, if that's what's, I'm not treating myself. So if my colleagues say this is what I should do, I'll go with that. So I didn't. It still wasn't an easy decision because I felt like, let me take it off and be okay. Some people are like that. They just feel take it off. Other people too are so scared of taking off their breasts. So it's, we have both extremes. But yes, for those who don't want to have their breast off, it's a concern. Thankfully, we have plastic surgeons we work with. And so even if you have to have the breast taken off, you can have a plastic surgeon recreate a breast for you. So that's an option that can be considered. There's the fear of the, there's a lot of stigma associated with breast cancer. So some people have had to, we've heard stories of patients who've had to, or survivors who've had to move from where they live. People have had to go through divorces, all sorts of things, because people stigmatize patients with breast cancer. So depending on where you are, if your family doesn't really understand, your friends, then you may end up with some of these social and psychological problems. There's the fear of how much it's going to cost you. So that is always an issue. Am I going to be able to afford the treatment? Yes, it is costly to some extent, but National Health Insurance would help a bit. And even in the hospital, we tend to get people who come and donate. So we have all sorts of groups, individuals who show up, especially in October, but all through the year increasingly. So we get some bit of funds that we can use to support patients. So the fears are many, yes, but the attempt is to try and overcome the fear and move forward.
We're talking to Dr. Florence Didi is a survivor of cancer, breast cancer, but she's also a consultant surgeon at Kolebu, which means that she has a very unique double-sided perspective she's sharing with us this morning as we learn about surviving cancer. This is the fifth in our Cancer Month series, and it's been quite an experience so far, Dr. Didi. When I meet people who have survived cancer, this is my personal view, I feel like I'm looking at a physically strong person. Like it takes some strength to overcome something that could kill you. Do you feel strong?
I wouldn't say so. I think I'm a Christian. So for me, I think a lot depends on God. I always would say that I don't know how those who are not Christians go through difficulties, because at the end of the day, I just say that God is in control. God knows why he allowed it to come my way, and God is able to take me through. So for me, that is where my strength comes from. I guess the decisions you take when you are faced with a diagnosis of cancer are very important. So unfortunately, we see people at times who even come in early, we make a diagnosis, and then they decide for one reason or the other, they don't want to have treatment. It may be because they are afraid of their outcomes or following surgery, or there are so many misconceptions about chemotherapy, about radiotherapy. So some people try and avoid that. Excuse me. So unfortunately, those fears at times cause people to not to take the right decisions. So then they decide to sit back, maybe try alternative treatments or not do anything at all. And then unfortunately, the cancer continues to grow. And by the time they decide that, okay, let me go to hospital, whatever they feared now comes to pass, because the cancer has had all the time to cause its damage. So I think a lot depends on the decisions. And it's not all personal. It's the support that you have as well. Because at times some people actually do want to have treatment, but then family, maybe husband, siblings, whoever is around them, parents say, no, don't go and do it. And for one reason or the other, they are not able to take the decisions on their own. So, I mean, for me, I always said, this is what has come. I will take these decisions, no matter whether anybody supports me or not. I'm going in this direction. It's not everybody who can do that. But then for everyone, if you have the right people supporting you, then it definitely makes it easier. Even if you said, I don't want to have treatment, and you have a husband pushing you, go and have a treatment, or you have a parent, or you have a sibling, it definitely would help to make that decision easier. So I think the people around you help a lot. They do make a difference as to how things go.
Dr. Florence Zidi is our guest, and she's telling us what it's like to survive cancer. She's also talking to us about her career as a surgeon who treats people with cancer. A double-sided perspective that we're learning a lot from. It's the Super Morning Show on Joy 99.7 FM. We're so glad you've stayed with us all morning. Our guests today who are helping us navigate our conversation on surviving cancer, Dr. Florence Zidi, who is a consultant general surgeon at Kolebu Teaching Hospital. She's also survived cancer, is telling us about her personal experiences. We also have joining us via Zoom Dr. Abna Sapong, who's a palliative care specialist. She's the head of the palliative care unit at the Department of Family Medicine at Kolebu. And she joins us via Zoom. Dr. Sapong, good morning to you.
Good morning. Hearing to report you, and good morning to my boss, Dr. Zidi.
Hey, I've had so many phone calls about you, Dr. Sapong.
Everybody
was calling to tell me that you are coming on my show, so I should roll out the red carpet for you. You have fans,
I'm privileged.
Yes, yes. Everybody. My sister was calling. Your husband was. How's Humphrey? How's he doing? Is he all right?
Humphrey's fine.
Very well. All right. Okay. We're very happy you could join us because you work in a particular field that very few unfortunate people get to experience. Maybe you could start off by explaining to us, the uneducated, what palliative care actually is.
Okay. Thank you. So palliative care basically is good medicine. That's what I say. Palliative care is providing comprehensive and holistic care to anybody who is suffering from a serious illness. We call it a life-limiting illness. It could or could not kill you. And so palliative care's aim is to ensure that the patient and their family have reduced distress and suffering as much as possible through the disease process. So just because, for instance, your illness cannot be cured does not mean that you should suffer, and neither should your family. And so palliative care is providing that comfort care spiritually, because when you're sick, it actually even affects your belief system. Palliative care is providing that comfort care for you and your family psychologically. There may be fears, there may be anxiety, there may be sadness associated with the diagnosis and everything you have to go through. Palliative care also provides that comfort care socially. Somebody might not be able to work, might not be able to do their hobbies, go out there, their family is in distress, they are constantly in hospitals, sending all resources. And so that social aspect is affected. And then palliative care also deals with the physical aspect, which is the symptoms that have been brought about as a result of the disease process. And so it's a multidisciplinary team approach. You have doctors of different cadre of specialties, nurses, clinical psychologists, dietitians, all coming together to help the patient and their family going through this. I'd say that initially palliative care was seen as just end of life care. When you're dying and there's nothing that can be done for you, then shift the person to palliative care. But that has changed. The definition has evolved over the years. And now, end-of-life care, it is just a component of palliative care. So long as you have a serious illness and you're suffering as a result of that, palliative care is that comfort care that reduces your suffering as a result.
By the time cancer patients come to you, what's their state of mind?
So unfortunately, because people still have that misconception that palliative care should only come in when all curative measures have failed, most of the patients that come to us are advanced. They are advanced cases, but are probably no longer responding to treatments. And that's when the, you know, refer for palliative care. Sometimes a state of mind is one of loss of hope, depressed, fear, anger, pain. Very few people are very hopeful by the time they are referred to us, because communication of what we really do may not have been properly done. Some of them are excellently done. People would go on Google, and Google would still give the definition of hospice care. And most of the time, really, such people have very advanced diseases, and reversibility is a problem. So they're really broken. They're really broken. And that's when we come in to try to help them out of that broken state, that even if the outcome cannot be changed, we may just be able to affect the journey.
Hmm. I know that there are some great medical professionals in Ghana, especially at Kolebu, who do a fantastic job. And sometimes doctors have to go above and beyond, you know, mm-hmm. in aid of their patients. But I get the feeling that in your unit, above and beyond is basically the bare minimum, that you really have to extend yourselves for the benefit of your patients. What does that feel like?
Oh, it can be hard sometimes. It can be hard. You can imagine constantly seeing painful side of people's health, having to deal with families crying all the time, resources being exhausted because of hope that a curative measure would have worked and it's no longer working. There are people who sell their land, they sell their property in anticipation that a cure would be given, and it's no longer given. So it's very draining on us as health workers. It can be very draining. But I believe we are always guided by the fact that our goal is to help. Our goal is just to try and make things better, because the fact is, who would help them? I mean, we're all coming together to help them. Even if they don't see a doctor or they can't take a medication to cure them, they're going through a lot of distress. They are crying. But sometimes we make things better. We try to make things better. There are people who are afraid because they're leaving their family, young children. And then you start having a conversation with them that, have you put anything in place? Have you thought of things that you could do for your children to make life better? I think that for me, my hardest is children's palliative care. And when I have to attend to patients who are my age, it's always hard for me. And children's palliative care is so interesting, because you may have a child who has a bad prognosis and may die, and they're just playing around, and their parents are aware, and they are crying, and they're in distress, and it's so sad. It's so sad. In fact, today I have a hat on, not because I just want to wear a hat, because today is International Children's Palliative Care Day, and everybody wears a hat. And if you are asked why you're wearing a hat, and then we tell you about children's palliative care and maybe palliative care in general. So it can be very distressing. Sometimes you need to take a break, put in self-care measures that work for you as a healthcare practitioner, seek psychological support. It can be difficult, but we are driven by the fact that at the end of the day, we are able to provide help for a patient. And even if the patient dies, provide help for the family. We establish very strong bonds, even from families, with patient relatives. And I think that's the ultimate goal.
Stay with us, Dr. Sapuan. I've got loads more I want to ask you, but I'm bringing Ben, your colleague. And by the way, for those of you who are listening, you will have noticed the difference in sound quality. We apologize. I think our Zoom connection is not great, but we can hear Dr. Sapuan quite clearly. It's just that the quality is not the best. We're working on that. We're hoping to improve that for you. Let me bring in Dr. Didi. And I guess we can start looking at things more from the sort of the treatment side of things now. How well equipped is Ghana? Not just Kolebu, right? But Ghana. How well equipped is Ghana for the treatment of cancers?
That's a difficult question. I think so. You clearly said not callable. So some places, I think, are very well equipped. So when you take the teaching hospitals, there's facility for definitely surgery, for chemotherapy, for radiotherapy, immunotherapy, and those are the usual arms along which cancers are treated. But when you go beyond the teaching hospitals, then the problems start. So when we take radiotherapy, for instance, there are only three centers in Ghana which have radiotherapy machines. So two in Accra, one in Kwalibu, one in a private center, and one in Komfanoche. So that means anybody in Ghana who requires radiotherapy as part of their cancer treatment has to find their way to one of these centers. Clearly, if you are in Accra, it's not so difficult. Or if you are in Kumasi, it's not so difficult. But then as you move further away from these areas, it becomes a problem. And radiotherapy for cure is usually not given on just one day. It's given for a number of days, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks. So people have to move from wherever they are and find a place to live and access these facilities. When it comes to surgery, I think that's a lot better because you have surgeons scattered all over the place. So all regional hospitals are equipped. Probably not all the surgery. So depending on the specialty you are looking at and depending on what type of surgery, they may not be able to handle everything, but at least a lot of the basic things can be done. Chemotherapy as well initially wasn't so widespread, but increasingly more centers are able to also administer chemotherapy. So we are not quite there yet. I think there's still a lot to be done in terms of facilities and improving access to treatment for patients.
Now, we keep hearing that early detection is so important. In your experience, break it down into percentages, just top of your head. I mean, would you say that more people detect early than
No,
those who don't?
unfortunately not. So I'll use breasts as an example because that's the area in which I work. For breast cancer, we have probably about 60%, at times even 70% being detected late. And so that's what skews our outcomes negatively. Because when you have, in a study that was done in Kwalibu a while ago, for those who were detected very early, stage zero, stage one, 5 year survival was more than 90%. For those who were detected stage four, which is where the cancer has spread beyond the breast, the 5 year survival was about 15%. So you can imagine that if you have more in the stage three, stage four, as compared to stage zero, stage one, stage two, then you are more likely to have a poorer overall survival. So unfortunately, excuse me, unfortunately, we have most of our patients coming in late. Occasionally, like I said, a few of them may even come early, but because of fear of treatment or whatever it is, they disappear and they come back when it's late. So the early detection is not the only thing. It's early detection coupled with effective treatment. Because if you pick it early and you still don't do anything about it, it's just as good as not picking it early.
Dr. Sapong,
Yes.
maybe some numbers from you as well. I mean, about how many patients do you see in your unit? What would it be, monthly, yearly?
Well, so in Kwalibu we have different teams in the hospital, and I will be speaking for the palliative care unit, which has the Pioneer palliative care team. For our unit, we see an average of about 20 a week,
Cancer patients.
and then it, in a year for. Last year, for instance, we saw about 363. Now, this is because it's a referral-based clinic. Services of palliative care under the clinic are not covered by national health insurance, and so patients have to pay for services. Sometimes patients just don't come because they will Google where palliative care is, and it just coming means that you've accepted that you're dying. these are some of the things that deter. Some physicians also might not refer to palliative early because they feel like, let's just continue managing, seeing what we can do. And where there's nothing we can do, then we can send to palliative care. So these are the numbers we're recording based on all that's going on. However, most of our cases come in the advanced stage. Most of our cases come in the advanced stage.
So all those numbers were for cancer?
So about 97% of our referrals are for cancer. However, we have other non-oncological referrals for maybe a chronic kidney disease. In both children and adults, we have for Parkinson's, we have for strokes, but majority of our referrals are cancer patients.
How often do people survive after coming for palliative care?
Survive? We can depend. So the longest stay for a patient after referral to our clinic has been 3 years. We actually have a patient who is still coming, was referred 3 years ago, and comes to the palliative care clinic, goes to the oncology unit, goes to the gynae unit. So in our records, that has been the longest we have had.
Wow.
However, we have referrals where patients are actually gasping on the point of dying. They are struggling for breath. And then you have a referral to come and see that patient. Usually there's very little you can do at that stage other than provide some sort of care for the family, bereavement care, and to support them. But most of our numbers are very, very advanced. And we have a patient who's been with us for 3 years.
Wow. That's encouraging. What would you say is the challenges? Or let me rephrase the question: what would make your work easier?
Oh, I love that question. I think our work would be much easier if all services were covered by insurance, where you just write a medication or write an intervention and it's done. Our work would be easier if we had the numbers. Currently, there are very few palliative care physicians in the country. The Mercer numbers are catching up, but it's still not the required number. So human resource and expertise in palliative care is really low. We would also, things would be easier if we'll develop that perception that palliative care is not end of life. It's not doom. And health practitioners will actually initiate palliative care. There are levels of palliative care. The first level is for every health practitioner to actually know what it is, be able to discuss with their patient, and moving on to be able to refer appropriately. Sometimes you have a patient coming to the clinic and their diagnosis hasn't been discussed. And then you're told, I was told when you come to the clinic, when I come to the clinic, you tell me what's wrong with me. I feel that initial diagnosis, even though that initial conversation must be held with a patient before the patient is referred to the palliative care clinic, because we tend to spend a long time on a patient. Averagely, we spend about an hour and a half or two on one patient. And that's how come we are making an appointment-based clinic. Because someone comes and he says, why were you asked to come to a palliative care clinic? He says, well, I don't know. They said when I come, you tell me. Or they said you'd show me how to eat better. Or a patient who clearly would not make it, you're told, they said when I come, you would take care of me and then I'll go back and continue my treatment. Knowing very well that is not the thing. So most of running away from this very difficult conversation, if all health practitioners would try and initiate the conversation and maybe have us continue, that would help. We also have home care services, but that is also a paid service. And I think that if this is covered at insurance, then with increasing team members, we'll be able to go out there to see patients who may not be able to sit in a car and come to the clinic, because sometimes it's challenging even getting someone to sit in a car for review. So cost is a problem. Human resource is a problem. Awareness is a problem. And if this is dealt with, I think our work will be much easier.
If you just joined us, we're having our conversation about surviving cancer. It's the fifth in our series, our Cancer Month, Cancer Awareness Month series. And our guests, Dr. Florence Diddy, who is a consultant surgeon at Kolibu. And she's joined by Dr. Abner Sapong, who's the head of palliative care unit, also at Kolibu. This is how I think we should wrap things up. Dr. Florence, you've got millions of people listening right now, some of whom are going through what you went through, are terrified, have no idea what's coming next. Unfortunately, we're being told some of them don't even get properly diagnosed and then they get sent to palliative care. So they may not be benefiting from the very best attention, depending on which hospital is looking after them. They're scared. They have no idea what's coming next. But you do. Talk to them.
Well, I would say that we should also talk to our doctors and our healthcare practitioners. So, unfortunately, at times, patients, of course, because of all that they are going through, so Dr. Sapong mentioned that patients may get to them and don't even know what is wrong. Very often we actually have told them, but it all didn't sink. So like I said, it's good to have support along this journey. So even when you are coming to hospital, if there's somebody you can come with, it's good. You come with a friend, you come with a partner, you come with a child, and they're sitting in the conversation. So even when you leave and you've forgotten some of the things, they can remind you about it. So I think the support is very important. Don't try and go this journey alone. It's difficult. It's almost impossible. So make sure you have support, good support to carry you through. And talk to your doctors. Discuss things. If there's something you don't understand, something you're not happy about, something you're not sure of, just ask the questions and we would answer. In times past, it's like people were afraid. They don't want to. Their doctor says it and it's final. I don't even want to ask any questions. But if you ask, I mean, you will be told. You wouldn't ask a question and the doctor will say, no, I will not tell you. So whatever is on your mind, whatever you don't understand, feel free to talk. And these days, we also work with, also have a lot of support in our work, let me put it that way. So in Kolibu and several other places, there are breast care nurses, there are survivors who come and help, there are psychologists. So there's a lot of support around. Reach out and try and get all the necessary help that you need. It's not there are, well, different stages of it, different outcomes. But whatever it is, there's always some hope. There's always something that can be done. Even if it cannot be cured, often some control can be given. Symptoms can be controlled and all that. So I think we shouldn't give up. We shouldn't lose hope. We should reach out for help and be compliant with whatever treatment that is offered to us. And when you are not happy with something, don't just disappear. Don't just sit at home and decide I won't do anything. Seek another opinion, talk to somebody else, discuss what is going on. And I think in so doing, you'll be able to get the best for yourself.
I thought I'd save the last word for you, Dr. Sapo. I mean, it's scary, cancer. And you see the scariest part of it. What's your message for those listening?
My message is that yes, cancer is scary, but does not have to be scary depending on how you look at it. So usually fear is what prevents most people from presenting early to the hospitals. Most people detect changes in their body, but the fear of the unknown keeps them at home. My advice is detect a change and seek help. Seek help in a hospital, seek help in a facility. Spirituality can be added to the medical treatment that is being given. So you don't need to choose one or the other. You can deal with both. What I would also say is that we need a policy for palliative care in the country. We need to ensure that palliative care is integrated across all health systems and not just in tertiary or quaternary institutions, at all levels of care, irrespective of where you are in the country, even in the most remotest of places, you should be able to receive this care. Palliative care is supportive care. That's what I can say. It is supportive care. If you are free to use the word palliative, we will call ourselves supportive care for you, because the cancer journey is one that affects you holistically, and you will need that help and support in every aspect of your life. So please come when you're referred. Thank you.
You've both given us a lot to think about, and I'm very grateful to you both, Dr. Abner Sabon, who heads the palliative care unit at Kolibu, and Dr. Florence Dede, who is a consultant surgeon, also from Kolibu. Thank you both for your time with us this morning. God bless you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.